What keeps you going? Where do you get your motivation? Whether you just want to be the best you can be or the best there ever was, we're here to keep you inspired. Conversations with today's top fitness influencers, coaches, athletes, and bodybuilding professionals. This is Inspired Fitness. Here's your host, Sean Feuderer.
Welcome back to another episode of the Inspired Fitness Podcast. My co-host, IFBB Pro Kimberly Helm, couldn't be with us today, but I am joined by a very special guest. He's men's health and longevity expert, co-author of the book Kicking Ass After 50, Zane Griggs. Zane, how are you doing today?
Great, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you being here. I'm a little disappointed that Kim couldn't join us today, but I think you and I can keep this going.
For sure.
So you've been in the fitness game for quite some time. You've been on the cover of Men's Health magazine. You've been specializing in longevity and health over the age of 50. And you've got this really crafty play on words program called Healthy AF. My kids think means something different than after 50. But tell me a little bit about this. What have you got going on?
Well, like you said, I've been in fitness for coming up on 26 years now. And my career shifted over the years from kind of general weight loss at the beginning. Everybody wants to do weight loss. And as I got into my own late 40s, and many of my clients were in that profile as well, I got to connect with some great people as clients who had a focus on fitness already, but their careers were like their real focus. I mean, their careers were what got them up in the mornings, what drove them. And the last thing they wanted was to be taken out or sidelined of the career by a health issue that was preventable, some sort of preventable issue like high blood pressure, high blood sugar, something that they could adjust with their lifestyle. And they found that, you know, what they were doing through their 30s, maybe early 40s, wasn't as effective as they got closer to 50, just because of the natural decrease in hormones, you know, growth hormone and testosterone and so forth, that just made things a little more difficult. You have to be a little smarter. You can't just power through everything. You need recovery. Your recovery so much when you're, let's say, you need to really maybe scale back alcohol, or you pay more attention to sleep, or make sure your diet's on point, or you're not overtraining. And so there's things that nuance that really would help them optimize their health rather than just trying to bulldoze through everything with like go, 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 full out power, you know, that kind of like, let's blast through everything. Well, no, we're not an age where we should be blasting through every wall and obstacle. We might need to learn how to strategically manage these things. And then I found that just from my own life in scaling back, finding I was pulling too many stressors myself. It's on my diet and the way I was doing things that I had to adjust in my late 40s. And so that really gave me some perspective on how to navigate that particular time in our life, you know.
I mentioned before we started recording, right? I'm reaching that milestone this year, 50. And the things that you're talking about, right, in terms of understanding where we're at with our hormone levels, testosterone, and so forth, right? Yeah. Starting to get the blood draws and pay more attention to that.
Right.
And I've had to adjust my diet significantly. I've got, I've got some goals around a certain percentage of body fat that I want to be around. And what I'm finding is what I used to eat even 10 years ago in my early 40s is not getting the job done the way that I need it to now. So I've got to be more aware of that. And like most people, right, I have a career. I'm trying to balance career with family, with fitness, and the other hobbies that come into play. And it's not always easy to do. I find that I'm not always eating the way I should. I'm not always sleeping the way I should. I'm constantly overtraining. And I imagine you get a lot of people that come to you in similar situations, whether they're going over and above or they're just getting started. The advice that you tend to give them, what is that for somebody in my situation, for example, corporate executive, traveling around the world, food constantly different, sleep constantly different, and training all the time? What would that look like?
Wow, you got a lot of variables there. Yeah, you got to. I think sleep would be, with that kind of travel schedule and work schedule, sleep is something to prioritize. That's going to affect recovery. It's going to affect your appetite, your cravings, your blood sugar. So the next day or 2 days, you know, your recovery becomes much more of the focal point at this point in your life. And yes, that has to do with food. It has to do with training schedule. But I think sleep is crucial. It's one of those things you can't fudge too much. And as much as you can prioritize that with consistent bedtimes, as consistent as you can be traveling, with maybe using something like blue light blockers and avoiding, you know, a close screen time before bed, adjusting meals so that you're not eating your last heavy meal of the day, eating dinner, unless, you know, give yourself at least 2.5, maybe 3 hours between your last meal and bedtime. It's those kind of things, you know, avoid bright lights. Any kind of ambient, you know, white light in the evening is going to stimulate your eyes to think, okay, it's still daytime. And so it's going to inhibit or delay melatonin production, which would, of course, affect your sleep. So it's little things like that that would help kind of prepare your body to calm down. I mean, it maybe avoiding work emails or work-related conversations. I mean, we need time to land the plane, so to speak. We need more time to land the plane as opposed to when we're in our 30s, you can just hit the pillow and we're asleep, right? We don't worry about the... It's like now there's a little more to like calming the body down, getting the heart rate down, getting your parasympathetic nervous system more engaged. I would say with regards to diet, prioritizing protein becomes more and more important as we get older. It's harder for us to digest and process. We need a little bit more of it than maybe we needed in our 30s, just for that reason alone, just because we're not absorbing it as well, but also for the recovery. And I think we see that getting the adequate protein for recovery from workouts, it's not going to be a band-aid or a magic pill for overtraining by any means, or for being underslept. We have to hit all these markers. So the protein is just there so our tissues can recover properly, and we have all these other functions that we use protein for. And then recovery is definitely important. I need more space between my workouts now. So I try to, it doesn't sound fun, but I would prefer to work out more often. But as far as resistance training, if I'm really hitting it, ideally I want a workout day and then a rest day, and then a workout day and a rest day. And I found that's most sustainable and less likely to hit a plateau. And then if I need to, I will occasionally, because of schedule, put two workout days together, but then I'll be sure to have a rest day afterwards. So it might be an upper body day and then lower body day together occasionally. But I know to avoid plateaus, to sustain forward progress, I just need more rest between workouts to let that inflammation calm down. It just takes a little longer for the inflammation from the workouts to dissipate. Yeah. And that inflammation can affect not only the recovery, but it can affect your performance in your next workout. If you're inflamed, if you're a little fatigued from your last workout, you're not going to be able to get to the highest point of exertion. So when we want to hit those high threshold motor units in our workout, we need a lot more oomph. If you're quitting 3 or 4 reps before failure, well, you might be leaving a couple reps on the table that would really be stimulating those highest threshold motor units that are so hard to get to, especially if you've been training a long time and you've already developed the lower threshold motor units, and that's the only room you have for growth and progress or strength of those high threshold motor units. And if we stop our workout short because we're fatiguing or perceiving that we're fatiguing, then we're going to be leaving some money on the table in regards to stimulating those muscle fibers, you know? So it really comes down to strategy. Like, how do I work out and recover smarter? Again, it's not trying to blast through the brick wall.
I love that. That's a great point, right? I see guys all the time in the gym who are cycling through, you know, their splits without taking any rest. And these are generally people close to my age, if not a little bit older. You have conversations with these folks, and part of their rationale is, and frankly, I'm guilty of this too, I do it for my mental health. I'm not worried about the physical result. I need to be in here. I need to be moving. I need to be active. And for them, that's mental health in part.
I get that.
But I really appreciate your views on recovery. It's the way that I respond is roughly the same. It's a 3-day split, upper body, lower body type thing. And then, you know, there's rest periods in between. So what you're explaining works for me. How did you figure out, or how do you help clients figure out if that or something else is going to work for them?
Well, I start with what I think is the most simple and most typical. And I think in general, working out, for instance, 5 days in a row is not ideal, really, for anyone. I think over 30, 35, unless you're on some kind of special supplement, so to speak. But even then, you're still leaving money on the table. But as we get older, I kind of just take it as most people are going to need more rest, and they'll do better with a more intense, short, intense workout and then a rest period or rest day. Now that rest day doesn't have to be complete immobility, obviously. I mean, it could be some cardio in there. It could be even high intense cardio. It could be a mobility routine, something else that gets your heart rate up that helps you move and exert some of that nervous energy. But for the most part, I start with, you know, you're going to need 3 or 4 days of resistance training, ideally, to maintain muscle mass, but also not more than that to avoid overtraining, and then just adjust. Then it's just a kind of adjusting to the person. But it's really easy to start with, you know, 3 or 4 days in a week and see how that seems to work best for them and how that, you know, how they respond.
Well, what are your thoughts on the link between nutrition and the training?
Man, that's a broad topic. There's so many people coming at nutrition from different directions these days. I'm not a big fan of the plant-based move, honestly. I don't think the protein is adequate. It's not, certainly doesn't compare to animal protein as far as amino acid availability and breakdown and as far as breakdown by, I mean, the number of amino acids available per food group. In other words, the full essential amino acids available in a single food, but also the availability of that and the amount that you need to eat in order to get what you need without supplementation. So if you can get a whole food protein in an animal-based source, there's not a lot of carbs on board. There's going to be some fat depending on which protein you choose. It's lower calorie than something like if you're trying to get that same protein from a whole food plant source, obviously. And then center the diet around that protein target. So I try to get people to target their protein somewhere around 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight. Yeah. That's a great target. And then bring in whole food sources for the other needs, whether carb needs, like potatoes or maybe some fruit or, you know, sweet potatoes, something like that, where you have a whole food, low inflammatory source of carbohydrate, and avoid processed food as much as possible, because the processed foods are so full of not only excess calories, but just inflammatory foods like a lot of the processed oils that are packed in there instead of traditional fats we had in our food from 150 years ago, or excess sugars. And so what you see with processed foods is a macro ratio, something like 10% protein. It's like 40 or 50% carb, 45% fat, and it's not high quality food. So you're just getting this excess energy, this excess calories in a very unnutritious, low nutrient, I should say, a food with a very low nutrient density, as opposed to something as simple as a potato. You can get the starch you need. You're going to feel satisfied from it. It's got some nutrients in it, certainly better than a processed food, but it doesn't have all of the extra additives. And your body recognizes this food. I don't see a whole lot of people chowing down on 4 or 5 potatoes in a meal. You know what I mean? You have one potato, good sized piece of meat, you're full, you're satisfied, as opposed to plowing through a bag of chips or something like that. Yeah. So I stress again, animal protein at the center of the diet, whole food sources for their energy and activity and recovery needs. And that can be adjusted based on their goals. If they're trying to lose a little weight, you can pull that back. If they're trying to put some on, you can bring it up a little bit and pack those carbs maybe ideally around the workout, maybe a little before, a little after, and if you can take in most of your carbohydrates before and after your workout, you're going to get, in my opinion, the best leverage out of them and make the best use of them now for fueling high performance in your workout, and then for that recovery that we want to see kick in as quickly as possible.
Good advice. It is really good advice. You know what I find is I have different conversations with people, mostly people who are just entering into their fitness journey, or they're not completely educated on how to eat properly or what to do in the gym. They always start with the what to do in the gym and don't correct the how do you eat properly. I say we in the sense of like people who have a general understanding of what proper nutrition might be for whatever your fitness journey is, whether it's performance or growth or lean muscle mass, whatever the case may be, we throw around terms like whole foods. A lot of people don't truly understand what that is.
True.
How would you advise somebody to go about creating a shopping list, if you will, of the right things to potentially eat for their fitness journey?
Ooh. Well, I mean, whole food, let's think about whole food. It's a single ingredient food, right? It's like there's not an ingredients list on this food. It's you start with your as the old advice goes, the perimeter of your shopping of your grocery store. So you got produce, you've got the fish, the meat, and the dairy all along the perimeter, and all the processed food is filling the aisles, like the cereals and the cookies and the crackers and all the things with 10 to 20 ingredients, many of multiple words you've never heard of before. So those single ingredient foods are where you want to stay. You don't see a lot of people gaining excess weight eating meat, a little dairy, fruit, and veggies, and some starch in there. You just don't see people getting obese or developing diabetes eating with those foods, if that's their grocery list. That's what your grocery list should be. It should be primarily those foods, 90%, right? As opposed to the standard American diet, which tends to be 65 to 70% processed food, the foods in the center aisle. So making that distinction alone in where you're choosing your food, I think is the first step to making sure you're not going to be way off target. And then adjusting, as you said, for what their goals are, whether trying to gain or trying to lean out or just worry about performance. But I think a mix of foods, if depending on your goal, the protein at the center, I would stick with, as far as macros goes, go with that macro target I mentioned earlier, and then build around that for your needs. So you're looking at simple carbs, simple ingredient, those single ingredient, simple foods like potatoes, sweet potatoes. You can try some low glycemic fruit, berries are good if you're trying to, you know, adjust for sugar and weight loss, maybe melons, a little citrus here and there. But what you think of, what would I have eaten if I were on a farm or if I had a garden? What would the food sources be? And that's kind of what your diet or grocery list should look like. Could these foods be found in a garden or on a farm?
Yeah.
And I think that's a good question to start with. From there, the mix, the adjustment is really, again, dependent on the person and their goals and their recovery needs. I don't know if that's not as granular as you would.
No, I think that's great advice. You see, there's such great marketing out there today for these, you know, for these processed products that claim to be protein rich and, you know, they're healthy, right?
Right.
Quote unquote healthy. But the reality is they're processed foods. They're full of artificial ingredients and unhealthy fats and dyes and other things that are going to have an effect on you. And I think you properly pointed out earlier, those things have an inflammatory effect. And most people recognize that in that bloating feeling that they get. Man, I'm guilty of it too. You know, in my early 30s, before fitness really kicked in for me, you know, that I walked around eating that junk and feeling terrible and run down and tired all the time. And boy, but I tell you what, making the switch, you know, it was a gradual switch, but making the switch to eating a lot healthier, focusing on your chicken, tuna, fish, salmon, right? Some red meat. I'm not a huge vegetable guy, but, you know, green vegetables, green beans, broccoli, things of this, asparagus, right? Things of this nature. And then carb fillers, like simple carbs, like white rice, or sweet potatoes, things like this, right? These are things that helped me when portioned properly and eaten in smaller portions more frequently. So I'm talking, you know, 4, 5, 6 meals a day, and supplementing that with a 12-hour fast. So you don't eat before or after 6 p.m. and you don't eat before 6 a.m. That's what worked for me. You know, I don't think I've ever quite been in Men's Health magazine cover model shape. But, you know, 12 to 15% body fat and, you know, feeling good. That was perfect for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think that 12-hour fast is a great rule. I think it's pretty common to what how we lived probably prior to, I don't know, maybe the mid-60s. I think that everybody kind of got up and they had a breakfast, they had a lunch, they had a dinner. They weren't snacking a lot and they weren't super active. You didn't see them in the gym all the time, but we didn't have the obesity problem that we had now, where we have people eating, of course, across 15, 16 hours of the day, constantly snacking, almost grazing with nutrient poor foods. So they're never feeling really satisfied or like they're satiated because they're just not, and they're not eating distinct meals. I think if someone's struggling to balance weight, you know, 3 or 4 meals tops would probably be good in that 12-hour period. If you're trying to build some growth and you want to go 4 to 6, I think as we get older, we have to watch that because you want to make sure you have time for blood sugar levels to come down and insulin to level out. But it is very individual. And as long as you're looking at your blood work and you keep an eye on your fasting insulin and your A1C, and that's working for you, make it work. It really is the food choices and then what you do with how you expend that energy really has a lot to do with it. You see athletes who are training 4 to 6 hours a day, they need to constantly eat to keep feeding their activity. If you're lucky to get in 3 40-minute workouts a week, yeah, you probably don't need to feed that often, right? You could probably get what your needs met in 3 or maybe 4 meals in a day. And again, like you said, managing those simple carbs in portions that make sense, and prioritizing protein, I believe, and having some really like less starchy carbs along the side, like you mentioned, some of the vegetables you mentioned, or even some fruit. And so it's adjusting those energy foods around your energy output or around your activity levels and your goals. And that may change from week to week or day to day. You know, allow yourself room to adjust and not get too locked in on one particular approach, and notice if something's working for you, or if it stops, you know, you have to make an adjustment. I see that with a lot of people. If something was working for them in the 30s, like we mentioned before, 30s and 40s, then when you get closer to 50, the same approach, the same way of eating, or the same way of working out it may be overtaxing you, or it may be overfeeding you. And it's just your body is in a position to handle either the stress of the regular work, you know, the more frequent workouts, or handle the consumption of certain foods that was fine before, but now it's catching up with you and starting to gather around your midsection. We have to pay attention to how our body responds. And I think that's the big part of as you age, is just really assess how your diet is working for you. Is something still serving you? I mean, alcohol is a big part. You know, it's like you could push in your 30s, you get in your late 40s and 50s, alcohol really impacts your sleep a lot more. It impacts the way you feel the next day. Definitely gathers around the midsection a lot more than it did before. And it can have a real chemical impact on your liver and the order in which you digest, the way you digest food, your blood sugar control. But there's just things to consider we have to pay attention to, and realize we can't do things the same way going forward like we did in our 30s. And it's just being, I think, stay intellectually curious and humble about the way you do things, because it's probably going to need to change.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm feeling the effects of a lot of that now, and trying to figure out what those adjustments need to be is a process of trial and error. There's no quick fix. There's no one thing that you do. You have to try different things and figure out what works and what doesn't. You know, what I find is that's where a lot of people give up.
Yes.
And I'd really love your thoughts on like how to find the mental fortitude to push through that.
You know, high performers, athletes, business people, they all have coaches. They may be the best athlete in the world. They all have a coach. They all have somebody who's got who's from the outside perspective, looking in and saying, well, what about this? Well, let's adjust this. And they're encouraging them. They're correcting. They're helping through the trial and error to get the proper feedback. Like, did this work or didn't it? Or does it need more time? Trying to figure this stuff out by yourself in isolation, unless you're very familiar with how it works, it can be very challenging, and not just challenging in figuring it out, but challenging from a patient's perspective. Sometimes we need a help of either a coach or a community of people. We see a lot more online communities forming around certain needs, whether they're all about working out or diet or weight loss, whatever it is. They're like-minded and they're sharing ideas and they're encouraging each other. And you get a place to bounce things off of each other. And I think we need that. We need some way to bounce ideas off of each other, encourage each other, and keep each other moving forward. Otherwise, it gets pushed to the back burner. And the things that are calling our attention most will get all of our energy. This is a difficult thing. We do not have it figured out. If you can look back at nutrition, the history of nutrition recommendations over the last 40 or 50 years, you can tell we do not have this figured out. It's not simple. It's not one size fits all. And you're probably going to need some help, you know, and if that could be a friend who's also like, I bounce stuff off of my friends, and I'm a doctor friend I bounce stuff off of, and as well as other trainers and people in the space, because you just need that. Hey, how is this working for you? What do you think about this? What's your experience here? We need other people in our lives to bounce ideas off of, who are sharing their experience. That's just how humans are supposed to work. We are not meant to be alone in isolation with our ideas and be able to just figure things out. That really can take you in the wrong direction very quickly. Or you, again, like you said, you get frustrated and just give up. So I would say find a community, find a few friends who are like-minded and moving the same direction. Someone with experience would be great. Or find a coach that holds you accountable, who will ping you and say, hey, I haven't heard from you. What does your food look like now? Where are you at? You know, we all need a little bit of accountability in areas that we're trying to figure out and move forward in. You can't underestimate the impact of accountability.
Kim, unfortunately, she couldn't be here, but that's what she was to me. And that's kind of what started this whole journey. Is one of the first things that she said to me is, you know, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm your accountability partner. That's my role in all of this, right? It's to help make sure you're doing the things that need to be done. And she went on to train a couple of my kids and other things, right? So that's, I'm a huge advocate for it. I think it's great if you've got that. They're there to get you through the tough spots.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be someone that you hire, to your point, right? Yeah. This can be friends. This can be family. I'm constantly asking my wife to be an accountability partner, but yet somehow we still seem to have things in the house like, you know, cake.
I get it. Especially when you have kids in the house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My house is a zoo, Zane. You wouldn't believe it.
Well, I've been there. I've been there. I get it.
But yeah, so accountability partners, I think, are massive. And not just on the nutrition piece, right? But, you know, somebody that's, you're obligated to go meet at the gym at a regular time, is that's a huge motivator. You don't want to let that person down.
Right.
And then, you know, what naturally seems to happen, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but what naturally seems to happen is if you've got somebody that you're working out with on a regular basis, you're constantly talking about life, right? Mm-hmm. And then this helps support you on the mental health aspect of things, right? You're not only getting your frustrations out on the weights, but you're able to talk it through with somebody who you know and trust, and you value their opinion. And from a lifestyle perspective, these are things for me that make a huge difference in living a healthy lifestyle all the way around, right? We like to preach healthy mind, healthy body, healthy habits in our podcast. And that's kind of the trifecta.
Absolutely. I have a few clients that I swear I come away from our sessions with more than I came in with. And that's like, I gave them my services, but I came out from there with more in my head as far as what they gave to me, whether it was encouragement or some kind of something we were talking about that just resonated, and they were able to give from their knowledge, you know? And so there's a reciprocity there that comes with just, again, interacting with other humans. It's irreplaceable. It's irreplaceable. It's not, you're not going to get that from a Google search. Yeah. Right. It's not the same. And the energy that's exchanged is really vital. And it's really transferred, where it can motivate you personally. The other part of mental health, I think we're seeing more and more studies come out showing the benefits of exercise on brain health from a physiological perspective, as far as preventing cognitive decline as we age. It stimulates the hippocampus. And we have these myokines that are like little hormones, little peptides type of thing that come out from our muscle that stimulate different organs in our body, different processes. Some of them have to deal with metabolic flexibility, but some go to the brain, like the BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which stimulates the hippocampus, and which is where we live, learning and memory and so forth. So it's like there's this through our nervous system, there's a muscle to mind connection that improves that health as we age in an area where, let's face it, most of the medical community is lost in how to prevent this cognitive decline. As far as from a medical perspective, they failed. And many of the things that they told us weren't true. And so the what seems to be the most effective prevention of cognitive decline, the most effective intervention, is exercise.
Yeah.
Both cardio and resistance training have their own ways of stimulating that part of the brain, the hippocampus. And so there's like you said, the mental emotional part of it. There's the exertion of stress, which helps us manage things and calm down. But that long-term mental health of the brain health as an organ is also invaluable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Staying physically active, eating well, right? Your body's just naturally going to function better. And if you're getting your hormones checked, you know, for men my age, I'm learning you want to do this maybe twice a year at a minimum. Understand where you're at with testosterone and other key hormones. You know, make sure you're not losing that muscle mass, and then applying that mind muscle connection in everything that you're physically that you're doing. It doesn't seem like it's rocket science, man, but yet so many people are having a hard time figuring out how to make it all happen.
Yeah. And I see more and more people. I mean, we've probably heard this for a few years now, but more and more people referring to Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes, where you've, you know, it's like it's just an extension of that blood sugar control. Well, we know blood sugar control and keeping insulin levels down, it begins with diet and exercise, right? It's food choices and movement. And then you factor in sleep. I mean, those are your pillars right there. Diet, exercise, sleep. And as you mentioned, that interaction with humans, the mental side, where you have mental stability, emotional stability from that interaction with other humans and relationships. I mean, those are your pillars. That's the when we look at really older people who, it seems to be a mystery, right? We have these outliers that are, you know, that somehow make it to 100, 110, 120. And some of them have odd habits. But when we really look at the civilizations where we have, or the micro, I hate to use the term blue zone because I don't really buy into the blue zone thing, but I think there are communities and places where there seems to be a longer life expectancy. And the common denominator seem to be they're constantly active in staying alive. So they're either in a farming or a shepherding kind of community, but something they have to be active all the time. They're moving, they're eating whole food. It's a variety. It's different region by region, because each region has their own food, but they're isolated. And so they have to eat what's around them, mm-hmm. right? So they're eating whole food that's available to them. They don't have a lot of stuff being shipped in, and they live in community. Those are the things that we need to be trying to emulate and remember, not magic potions. You know, supplements are great for when we're missing things. We're all missing something from our diet or from what we're getting in our water even, but they aren't magic potions. They are truly supplements. They're making up a very small percentage, giving you a small percentage of an edge to get you from point A to point B, because you're just to make up a little gap. The majority of your health is going to come from your lifestyle habits around diet, exercise, sleep, and community.
You know, we've had a number of professionals come on, doctors, you know, professional athletes and others who have said the same thing, right? 95% of your results are going to come from your consistency and your routine of training and your diet. That other 5%, right, competitive edge type 5% is going to maybe will come from supplements.
Right.
And man, we went down this rabbit hole about supplements and trying to understand what's in them and the marketing behind proprietary blends and all the BS that goes into, you know, you never know what you're ingesting if it's some branded proprietary blend. They don't have to disclose. So, you know, you don't know what you're taking or what it's going to do for you. How to maneuver your way through picking what the right supplements might be for you. You have to be a scientist nowadays.
Yeah. No, I've met guys with, you know, three rows of supplements, like just, you know, they've got 60, 70 bottles there that they go through on a daily basis for the most part. And I have a variety of things. Like, I wonder if this is going to help with my sleep. I mean, if it helps with sleep, I probably tried it. You know, if it's some sort of supplement that like magnesium, which blend of magnesium, which cartilage protein, or is it going to be, you know, something else like that, theanine, whatever it is, it's going to help your brain relax to sleep. I mean, because that's probably my bigger hurdle, is getting that sleep to be consistent. You know, I'm going to try it. It's not poo-pooing supplements, because you want that edge in areas where you feel like you need that help. But what helped me more than anything was adjusting to my circadian rhythm with eating earlier in the day, starting my eating. I used to fast a lot. Well, if you're going to fast, I'd say start early in the day, but eating earlier in the day, getting light on your eyes early in the day, getting plenty of sunlight during the day, will do more for your circadian rhythm and your sleep quality. And then limiting the bright white light in the evening and the up close screen time and stressful conversations before bed, eating earlier as well, eating that heavy meal at least, you know, 3 hours before bed, that does more for my sleep when I'm consistent with it than any supplement.
Yeah.
You know, it's those habits that really set your clock that are going to have the greatest leverage for those kind of changes.
That's the best advice I think we can give people is, you know, the routine of eating your last meal a few hours before you intend to go to sleep is important, right? Mm-hmm. Your body needs to be in I won't call it a depleted state, but
restful state. What do you mean working it, actively digesting a heavy meal?
Your body will do better work when you're up and you're active than you will when you're laying mm-hmm. down, for sure. What are your thoughts? We talked a little bit about fasting, and you just mentioned that you practice fasting quite a bit. I'm currently doing that, right? It's 12 to 14 hour fast each day. With my current schedule, I'm training first thing in the morning in a fasted state. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, I have a few. So I think it depends on your goals and what's where your priorities are with that, what you're trying to gain. I spent a lot of time doing many years with fasted workouts, but really extended fasting into the 14 to 16 hours a day, and then train and then eat. And it worked for a while when I was younger. I looked great, but it started wearing on me cortisol-wise. I think my cortisol was high. I was sort of affecting my sleep. Wasn't recovering as well. So I think it needs to be managed when it comes. Now with cardio, I think you can play with it. You have a lot more room to play. With strength training, I do think you're going to get a little better performance with having a little something like a half an hour before, maybe even with a small amount of carbohydrate available on board. But I think you can do a fasted workout if you and recover quickly if you can have a meal shortly after. So I wouldn't push the fasting window too much, or I would adjust the fasting window to start, or the eating window really should start shortly after the workout. Fast workouts do create some stress. If you're trying to lean out, you're trying to burn off some of those triglycerides in the muscle. Yeah, that can work. If performance or ultimate, like the greatest amount of hypertrophy is not the first priority, then that's fine. I think a little fueling, if hypertrophy is your goal or performance is your goal, a little fueling half hour before, like a small amount, 20, 30 grams of carbs before your workout is probably going to give you a little more of an edge. And then you can have your fasting on the non-resistance training where you extend that, or maybe it starts a little later on the cardio days or the rest days. I try to make, at this point, it's so hard to get the edge in a workout at this point in my life, my age. And so if I can take any edge with just a little extra fueling going into a workout and make the most of what I'm in there for, which is develop strength or size, which comes through a higher level of performance, then that's where the focus is going to be. That's my primary goal. And then if it goes to another day where I'm like, okay, I'm going to lean out on this day, I might cut the carbs back, do a little more cardio, then I think there's more room for those kind of metabolic stressors. I was overdoing the metabolic stressors, and that was really impeding my progress for my body with strength training, with recovering from strength training with terms of size and performance and recovery. So that was my experience with it. Everyone's a little different. And again, it depends on your goals. If you're leaning out is more of a priority, then it can certainly be a part of it. But I would still pay more attention to your recovery on those resistance days and take a little more liberty with the fasting and the, if you want to do a lower carb or something like that on the recovery days, make those more about the fat burning or the metabolic stress.
That's good advice. It makes sense. It's pretty close to, I think, what I intend to do, right? This was born out of necessity, not my normal routine, but.
Sure. No, those early morning workouts, sometimes there's no time. If you're working at 5 a.m., there's no time to eat.
Yeah. But the great part is, you know, exactly what you said, you know, getting back from the workout, the first thing, you know, you do is ingest your creatine and have a meal. Yeah. Right. It serves its purpose, but
true.
You know, I think we're getting close to running out of time here, but I'm really anxious to know, how in the world did you end up on the cover of Men's Health?
Okay. So yeah, it's Men's Fitness. So that's funny. So it's not the US version of Men's Fitness. It's a South African version. So it's still in English, but it's, I had a connection with a photographer who lives maybe within a few hours of me. And I saw he was getting a lot of fitness girls basically on these covers and in magazines. And I realized, okay, some of them are different countries. So you have the US version, which usually has a celebrity on it. And then you have the versions from places like South Africa or Mexico or, you know, something like that, England, something like, you know, some other market where it is published in that country. And I said, hey, have you ever done this with a guy? I said, well, I got one guy in once. I've never had a cover with a guy, so let's give it a shot. So basically, I got myself in good shape, dieted down. We took some pictures, submitted them. They accepted it, and they gave me a little interview inside. So I got to kind of tell my story, and we used some of the pictures inside. So really, it was like, for me, I was, I guess, 51 when we took the pictures, got the cover at 52. For me, it's like, yeah, I know it's not the US version of Men's Fitness, but it is a Men's Fitness cover, and I'm 52 years old, and it's like it was like a notch for me. You know, it was like something, it made me work towards a goal and perform high. It's like, hey, this is significant. Okay, I'm not a movie star. I'm not going to end up on, you know, on cover of GQ or something that's, you know, like where they really focus on these celebrities. But it, to me, it was kind of a worthwhile endeavor. Give it a shot. I had done some modeling when I was younger, my early days, 20s, a little bit in my 30s. So I understood camera and so forth. And so it was and the impact of that kind of image. And so for me, it was, yes, it's a bit of a marketing thing for me as a trainer, but it was also a way to showcase, I think, what's possible, not just for me. Yes, it was some for me, but for other people to see, look, this is a possibility. Let's shatter some of the ideas we have about fitness in our 50s. And the best way to get eyes on it is to have it on some kind of cover, you know? And that was what the article was about. It's like, let's fitness in our 50s. Like, let's not, when we get to 50, we don't need to let off the gas. This is not time to let off the gas. This is time to be more strategic and be smarter so that we can keep performing at a high level at whatever we're doing. You know, that was aesthetic, but it ties to all the things you have to do to stay in great shape as you age. And so if some 30-year-old see that, it's like, well, you know, my dad's like his age, but he's looked like that. It's like, how do I be like that? Or another 50-year-old says, hey, you know, how do I get close to this? You know, I think that's the overall message that I wanted to get out there. It's like, let's shatter these concepts of you're stuck with your belly and your low performance and you're just, you know, things are just not going to work like they used to. There is an adjustment for age, but it doesn't need to look like 50 did in the 70s and 80s. We can have a new paradigm around fitness in our 50s and 60s. And if there's anything I want to convey to people, it's that. And I think that getting that cover was part of it.
Oh, I love it. I'm all about the fitness revolution. Let's keep it going, right? I want my generation to embrace that as much as the younger generations seem to be.
Yes.
Right. Everything I see on social media now is fitness related or in some way, shape, or form. So that's great for them, but you know, let's bring it around to our generation.
Exactly.
Dane, I mean, this has been one of my favorite conversations. And so I just want to thank you for being here. This is great. I love it. The fact that we're so close in age speaks volumes to me. And you know, that I'm not too far off from, you know, from where I want to be, but you're inspiring me to do things a little bit better, a little bit differently.
Thank you.
So I appreciate that. And for everyone else, join us again next time on the Inspired Fitness Podcast. Until then, we wish you a healthy mind, a healthy body, and healthy habits.
Thank you for listening to Inspired Fitness, leading you to a healthy mind, healthy body, and healthy habits. To stay inspired, visit us at inspiredfitness.net. That's INSPIRD.net. Until next time, stay inspired.